which has at least one feature, and we go deeper into the music, sometimes just two genres of music as opposed to the relentless genre jumping.
Very nice.
And what we're going to be doing tonight, starting at 8 p.m., is a theme called Six Finger Sloppy Slide and Glitch Core. And we've got a featured artist, the phenomenal American slide guitar player, Hound Dog Taylor.
Okay.
Who was actually born with six fingers on each hand.
What?
Yeah, it's called polydactylism.
No kidding.
And it actually didn't help him play better.
No.
And in fact, at one point in a kind of drunken moment of rage.
Oh, no. He cut one off?
Yeah, something Both? Like that. No, oh. just one.
Oh.
He didn't have the happiest of lives. He ended up dying age 60 of lung cancer because he used to smoke a lot of those Pall Malls.
Sure, sure.
But he was a phenomenal guitar player, so we're going to be having him as the featured artist and hear a whole bunch of songs from him.
Interesting.
And that's going to be contrasted with a whole bunch of this energetic subgenre of electronic music called glitchcore, which is something that has a lot of abrasive sounds, unconventional rhythms, and they use a lot of these glitch effects where they kind of stop and stutter. So it's going to be a kind of chaotic and intense listening experience for 2 hours.
Interesting.
And then we've also got some looking forward to Black History Month of February. I've got a speech excerpt from one of my freedom fighting freedom fighting idols, Malcolm X.
Malcolm X, all right.
Yeah, so...
Five-fingered Malcolm X?
Five-fingered, yeah.
Well, 10 fingers, yeah. Yeah, very good.
But as we were talking about, maybe one thing that we can do in this episode mm-hmm. is play some of my single song sound collage mixes where, yeah, every sound collage, the thing that makes them be sound collages is that I put audio clips from movies and TV shows and sometimes documentaries and political speeches in between and on top of the music in the songs. And we're going to start off with one here on Aux 2 that's very seasonal. And, AC/DC, I think their lyrics, they very rarely use bad words that we have to bleep out.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly a key part of their style is these double entendres.
Yes, yes.
And this next song is one called Snowballed. And what I've done is I've mixed some clips from a movie, a short movie mm-hmm. featuring a British actress, Layla Jade.
Very good.
And so, yep, if we got Aux 2 going.
It's all ready.
Then I guess we're ready to go right now.
Come on, you've teased me for long enough now.
It's WMFO in Medford.
Just put your hands up. Join these two hands, would you like?
Yeah.
WMFO in Medford, that is AC/DC, and Edward Buchard did the remix of that. What do you call that? The Plastic Sushi remix?
The Plastic Sushi Layla Jade a remix after the British actress who contributed some of the additional vocal pieces.
Very nice. Can I put War Machine in the background here while we're
chatting? Actually, that kind of stuff, if we're going to do backgrounds, let's go over to the promo block and play some of those, the ambience there.
All right. Why don't we do, I think last week we did Dawn, Environments, Dusk at New Hope. How's that?
Yeah. So this is at, this was recorded by Irv Tybell, who was somebody who recorded natural sounds and released the groundbreaking series of Environments records starting in the late 1960s. And there was a whole bunch of them, I think maybe 11. And this was, you know, a new way of listening and appreciating sounds.
Yeah.
Before people had albums and, you'd listen to music. But what, these sounds of just nature here?
Amazing.
And,
yeah.
And the ones that I think turned out even better than the Dawn and Dusk at New Hope was the same named pieces recorded at the Okefenokee Swamp in Georgia.
The Okefenokee Swamp. Have you ever been there?
No, I haven't. It seems like a fascinating place. It's if I went down to Georgia again, I'd want to go there.
Yeah. I think Kermit is from the Okefenokee Swamp. If I remember the Muppet Show on the Muppet movie, I think he was from Okefenokee. I'm not positive on that, but I think Kermit the Frog, I think they put a base camp in Okefenokee with him at one point.
Woohoo! Yeah. Yeah, well, he's my favorite Muppet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kermit's great.
So last week on my walk over here, I heard you talking about your dissatisfaction with Dunkin' Donuts.
Now, remind me what I was talking about with Dunkin' Donuts. I saw that on there and talking about the dissatisfaction of Dunkin's and the tip jar. Was it the tip jar?
Well, there was so as far as going to coffee places, I like coffee in general, but I'm not really particular. And I understand how people go into coffee houses and there's different experiences.
Yeah, yeah.
But the idea of paying $5 or $6 for some coffee is just not something that I do.
I'm just trying to remember the story. I think if I'm remembering it right, the Dunkin' Donuts story for me was going through a drive-through and the coffee was $2.10 and I gave the person a 20. And then they asked if I wanted my change.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, it's a 20. I'm like, that's $18. And I'm like, how many people actually Have you gotten on this little scam of yours?
Did you say that?
I didn't say it directly, but I was just like, I literally said, it's $18. I said, really? I'm like, it's $18. I'm not giving you $18. It's like the coffee cost two, and all you did was pour it and hand it to me. I don't even think they poured it. They just handed it to me.
Yeah.
The other person poured it, and like, you're going to split the extra 18 with that person, give them $9. But yeah, the dissatisfaction of Dunkin's. I think things are just going up too. It's like coffee used to be, you know, 50 cents, you know, 40 cents. And now they're making it special just by throwing a couple of shots of sugar in it. You know, they have hazelnut and vanillas and strawberries, all kinds of wacky things going through there. You said you're not a coffee drinker at all?
No, I am a coffee drinker, but I pretty much drink instant coffee at home, which I used to be much more like get buy ground coffee. And some of those things that you mentioned, yeah, way back. I remember this cherry-flavored coffee, chocolate and cherry flavored coffee.
Sure.
And I just used to love that. And we're going back, Chris, back to the days when I used to smoke tobacco cigarettes.
Sure. Yeah.
And getting up in the morning and yeah, that first cigarette, but that whole coffee thing.
Yeah.
But when it comes to things right now, I wouldn't go out to a Starbucks and buy a cup of coffee at all. There's the expense, but there's also just the kind of hassle with doing that. It takes a lot of time, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. And I would do it as not as a reward, but like a treat. Like if I were on my way here and I had like 20 minutes or a half an hour and I had a little time, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get myself a coffee. I didn't mind a mid-afternoon coffee, maybe a muffin. Maybe get a blueberry muffin. That was always my favorite there. But I was never a donut guy. I was never a big donuts guy. Now, did you have the, you said freeze-dried crystals, like a taster's choice, the instant coffee, something like that? Or?
I've actually got three different kinds of instant coffee that I go through. One is this very finely powdered espresso brand from El Salvador.
Yeah.
And it dissolves instantly in pretty much everything.
Nice.
And then I've got the taster's choice, which I think does taste more like a real ground coffee compared to the regular instant coffee.
Sure.
And then I got a Market Basket, their own house brand. And that one surprisingly dissolves very quickly in hot or warm water, but it takes forever in cold water. I like to mix that maybe with some other things like some Ovaltine.
Nice. And yeah, I love the Ovaltine. I haven't had that in a long time.
Yeah, yep. Chocolate and coffee going together.
Yep.
And I was wondering about restaurants, too. I mean, do you go out to restaurants much?
I do. As a matter of fact, not super often, but maybe once every week, maybe every 2 weeks, I'd say. Like, I went with my boss today for lunch, and I picked the place, and we went for a little Italian, and it was good. I had a little chicken gambino, which is a little chicken with some red pepper and spinach and a little mozzarella and some angel hair pasta on the side.
Oh, cappellini. I love that.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, very good. But with that, you know, just a lunch, you would think, 40, 50 bucks tops. We spent 80.
Uh-huh.
And didn't get any drinks.
Yeah, that'll definitely push things over.
I got a soda. We had one soda, and we had water, but we also had one appetizer. And I think one of the things that these restaurants are doing now is all these appetizers cost them about $2 to $5 to make, and they're selling them all for like almost 20 a piece now.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get something that's very small and you're paying $20, $25 for a plate of nachos, you know, or we ended up having arancini, which is good.
Do you enjoy cooking?
Yeah, I like to cook. I usually cook much more than I go out. But yeah, I'll make like a regular presentable meal, I should say, maybe every week, day a week. Yep.
What about buying frozen food? Like, I think some of the foods from Trader Joe's are quite comparable to what you'd get at a restaurant, and they're just, you know, they're frozen, so you could microwave them or bake them at home and save a lot of money and have it be more convenient because you don't have to go out.
Sure, yeah, I usually do vegetables mostly. I don't really buy too much that's frozen that's actual meals anymore. I used to. What I would do though now is mostly just get meats and I would freeze them, and then I would make some salads and take out the meats and cook them up. But yeah, there is a lot of good stuff out there. There's a frozen pizza that I actually like, which is a Cape Cod pizza, and it's very flat, and it's like a I don't want to say it's bar style, but it's like the old, like old school 60s, 70s. If you were sitting at a bar, your father was sitting at a bar having a little pony beer, you know, a little 4 to 6 ounce beer. He would order, you know, a small pizza for the kid that came along with him, you know, and that's pretty much what this type of pizza is. It's very dense, but it's very small. It's almost the equivalent of a small pizza, but very, very thin, but very dense. And it's tasty, so you can cut it into, like, you know, little, like 6 to 8 little triangles.
It's very funny that you mentioned it that way, because you said picture your father at a bar, and my father wouldn't be taking any of us to a bar.
Well, my grandfather did. I remember the grandfather would bring him, but my dad wasn't a drinker either. He never drank. But yes, Cape Cod pizza is probably my favorite frozen pizza there. I can offer that. It's Cape Cod Cafe in Brockton, and they still make these little pizzas. You might have seen them before with that logo here. So they make little bar pizzas, and you could actually order them online if you wanted to send a whole bunch of people pizzas for, you know, a gift someday.
Well, you know, pizza is one of those things that I really love, and I make a lot of varieties of it kind of myself. Mm-hmm. I used to go really all out, and I'd start by making the dough and kneading it.
Oh, you actually made the dough, too, huh?
Yeah, and I had a pizza stone, and I like the crisp crust.
Sure.
And so after making the dough and rolling it out, I'd put it on the pizza stone, and I'd let it cook for a while. And then I'd take it out, and I'd put the toppings on it, and then I'd put it in for a second time for that cheese to melt and it all to get warmed up. The whole thing was, I was aiming for the crispy crust, and I realized that it was best if you cooked the crust once first, and then put the toppings on, and then did that. And that could be very successful pizzas, but they sure took an awful long time to make.
Yeah, that's the one thing about the pizzas now, too. Even these frozen pizzas now, like, these ones are still about $7 or $8, and it's like another $5 you can just buy yourself a pizza, you know, and you can get a relatively decent one that's already been made for you.
Yeah, and what I found, though, my evolution of the homemade pizza comes down to now I buy this very good bread at Trader Joe's. They have a couple of different kinds. They're all good, but I have two different kinds of seeded ones. And in my toaster oven, I toast them on high so they get all crisp. And then I take them out and I put just some sliced cheese and other things, frozen meatballs or, you know, anything that, because you can put anything on pizza.
Sure.
And then I microwave that, and it takes a mere fraction of the time that the other style did with all of that. And it tastes really good, and the crust is really crispy because you toasted that. And so I just really have to spread the word about making individual pizza like that. Yeah. Microwave, then put your toppings, toast it in the toaster oven, put your toppings on there, then microwave it, and it takes just a few minutes, and it's delicious, whatever you want.
Yeah, I end up getting the dough right from Market Basket, and I'll make it that way. I made a few pizzas over the last couple of weeks, and especially in the wintertime. You know, it's nice.
That's another good choice. I sort of had that as a halfway cheating kind of thing, but oh boy, where am I right now with this? Just use the Trader Joe's bread. That's
right.
But it's not cheating because it works so well. It's just a great idea.
Well, yeah, too, and just to do the homemade pizza, it's an event, and if you're with somebody, it's fun. You can make it fun, and you get stuff everywhere. Flour goes everywhere, toppings go everywhere. Pizza's one of the. It doesn't have a whole lot of bowls, however, it does. It can get very messy very quick. You at least need a good broom.
A good broom, yeah,
in order to clean up afterwards. But I love making homemade pizza, too. And usually I'll do a little of everything on there, too. Like at last one, I ended up doing linguica. Do you like linguica at all?
That's a kind of cold cut?
It's Portuguese. It's from chorizo or linguiça down Fall River area. So it's a Portuguese sausage.
Yes. Yeah. So I have stuff like that. I like getting the variety packs of different kind of cold cuts and things like prosciutto and different types of salami-esque meats. But yes, I have tried that now, and I do like that.
And you can fold them over and just make yourself a calzone, too, if you want to do the cold cuts, which is nice. And just fold that thing in half, and it's pretty much a pizza that's turned into a calzone just by folding it in half.
Some people think that pizza is junk food, and I think in many cases it certainly can be. But I'd also argue that a well-constructed pizza is something that you could eat on a daily basis. So,
sure.
I mean, going heavy on the particular vegetables that you have in there, and maybe lighter on the crust and whatever proteins that you want in there. But you could make a pizza that I believe you would enjoy eating just all the time, and it would be 100% nutritionally complete if you put some thought into it.
Yeah, New Year's Eve, I ended up doing a couple of pizzas, and actually, I just did the one. I was gonna do two. I ended up doing one, but I did a layer of pepperoni at the bottom, and the sauce and the pepperoni, it actually heated up the pepperoni, so the pepperoni was super soft. It was like melt in your mouth because it had been boiled essentially under the sauce. And all the other toppings, the linguiça, I threw some tomatoes on there, like little sliced tomatoes and some mushrooms, and of course cheese. And that came out really nice. That was a different one.
That does sound good. And yes, there's when you get kind of good at figuring out how you could layer these things, little tricks that you could kind of do. Like I have the things with the layers of the cheese and the meat, and the bubbling cheese when it comes out there.
My favorite one that I had made when I was younger, I haven't done this one in a long time. It was a hamburger and mushroom. But what I did was I took a vegetable cutter and I just kept hitting it, so it was minced. So everything was minced, so everything just kind of melted in your mouth when you ate the mushrooms and the hamburgers. They were so small, and the cheese melted right into it. You know, it was just delicious, really good stuff.
Yeah, melting cheese.
I think one of the best, pizza's probably one of the things you could probably eat every day, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, the weight gain that eventually is going to happen. A person cannot live on cheese alone. Cheese and dough alone.
So as far as another song, I was thinking that I've got this one of Miles Davis, the Pan Piper, and then one of my biggest intellectual idols, the physicist Richard Feynman. And what I've done is I've layered on top a talk that he gave about the relative, trying to understand exactly how big an atom is, and particularly the size of the atom with the electrons around it versus the size of the nucleus.
Interesting.
So it's pretty educational sound collage remix, as well as having some spectacular jazz music by Miles Davis behind it. And then a little bit of something else right at the start there. Mildly provocative, but so, okay, we can start that now?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm not a bad girl.
Gonna make you a bad girl.
Thank you. Apparently, the quantum mechanics has several aspects. In the first place, the idea that a particle has a definite location and a definite speed is no longer allowed. That's wrong. And to give a measure of how wrong classical physics is, there's a rule that says that you can't both know where something is and how fast it's moving. The uncertainty in the momentum of it and the uncertainty in the position are complementary. The product of the two is a constant. If you want the law, if you like the right equations, you can write this. I will explain it some other time in more detail. This is the explanation of a very mysterious paradox. If the atoms are made out of plus and minus charges, why don't the minus charges simply sit on top of the plus charges? They attract each other. Why don't they just sit there on top? Why is our atom so big? Why, if there is a nucleus here and the electrons around? At first, it was thought that it was because the nucleus was big. No. The nucleus is very small. The atom in its diameter here is 10 to the minus 8 centimeters. The nucleus in its diameter is of the order 10 to the minus 13 centimeters. What does that mean? That means that if you had an atom and you wanted to see the nucleus, you'd have to expand it, magnify it, till the whole atom is the size of this room, and then the nucleus is a bare speck that you can just about make out with the eye, a hundredth of an inch or more, and all the weight of the atom is in that. What keeps the electrons from simply falling in? This principle. If they sat there, then you'd know where they were and that they weren't moving. And you can't have that. So they don't sit there, because if you try to put them there, they start moving around. Well, they move around and they take a compromise. They leave themselves a little room for this uncertainty, and they jiggle at a certain amount of minimum motion given by this rule. You remember also that when a crystal is cooled to absolute zero, the atoms do not stop moving, they still jiggle. Why? Because if they stopped moving, you'd know where they were and that they had zero motion. And that's against the uncertainty principle. You're not supposed to know where they are and how fast they're moving, so they continually wiggle in there.
I'm not a bad girl.
You're listening to WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. It's Chris Earle here with Edward Buchard. And we're just chatting about things, chatting about pizzas and Dunkin' Donuts, atomic energy. It was Miles Davis. And who was in the background there, the speech in the background?
That was the physicist, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman. And as he was explaining, the relative size of the atom is such that if the width, the diameter of the atom was the size of a lecture hall room, the size of the nucleus would be about the width of a human hair at the center of that lecture hall.
Interesting.
And he also explained some other things about the way atoms wiggle around even when it gets down to absolute zero. So there was a lot of information packed inside that little talk. He was a Caltech physics professor. He worked on the Manhattan Project, and when the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up, he was asked to be on the Rogers Commission that investigated it. And he was kind of the person who, at a news conference, he had done a lot of his own investigation, and he was kind of fed some breadcrumbs by people who knew a bit more but who weren't in a position to bring the information about the defects at NASA up on their own. And when he began to understand that the O-rings might have been responsible with the cold temperature.
Sure.
He went to a model that the manufacturer had put together for their reference. He took out the O-rings and then he put them inside some cold water. And as he demonstrated, if you took the O-ring out at regular room temperature and you pushed it together, it would compress and then it would come back out as soon as you let go. But then he dipped, he had one that was sitting in water,
yep.
And he took it out of the ice water. Which was served to him as the just ice water that he was drinking at the front, right?
Right.
And he compressed it, and then he let it go, and right there on television, everybody saw that it didn't come back.
Yeah.
And he said, I think this in the cold temperature may have been a big reason for the blow-up, basically.
Right, right.
And that turned out to be the case.
Yeah, what a sad time that was when Challenger exploded. Yeah. Was that Krista McAuliffe was the person on board that was the teacher?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of the her school children were watching it.
Yeah. I remember I was actually in high school at the time that happened, and that was a stopping moment in history for us when the Challenger blew up.
There were a lot of things that were wrong with what NASA was doing, but as Feynman pointed out, one of their biggest was understanding risks.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that the Space Shuttle Challenger had a 1 in 100,000 chance of a catastrophic error.
Wow.
Which is an astronomically high thing. I mean, it's something like maybe 200 years. You could launch one every day for 200 years
before
that. And he said, just think about that. Does that sound at all possible? And when they ended up, after the Challenger blew up, they had to recalculate the odds because now they had historical information.
Right.
And so the odds really were 1 in 52.
Right.
And then after that, they constructed another shuttle, and they sent that up, but that one also ended up failing catastrophically during the reentry.
Is that the Endeavour? It's a new space shuttle orbiter, the Endeavour, to replace the Challenger in 1987, and it said it flew in 1992.
And then, yeah, so one of the after they built that one, one of the other ones just burned up. Remember the tiles came off during the launch?
I don't. Another shuttle mission?
Yeah, the second shuttle mission that ended up resulting in a catastrophic failure.
Oh, yes, that's when that was like right after 9/11, so that was 2001. What was the name of that one? It'll come to me.
And so that was like the 117th shuttle mission,
right?
So at that point,
the Columbia.
Columbia, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that one, it turns out the odds weren't 1 in 1,000. The recalculated odds.
Right.
And so I think the idea of estimating risks for things is a fascinating subject, and it's one that's really poorly understood by people.
Yeah, yeah. That's 2003 was the Columbia disaster. Did you ever get to see a shuttle go up?
Yes, I did.
I did as well. I saw Columbia go up in the 80s with my father. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I traveled with my roommate at the time in college. It was a January, I think. And it took us 24 hours to drive down to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was quite a quite a thing to experience.
I remember them telling me that in order to move the launch platform, for every gallon of gas, it would go 1/4 inch. That's how heavy it was. And, it was just interesting to see this giant launch platform and all the stuff that that was involved with that, because we were able to take like a little tour and be able to go by it, but then we saw the actual launch from outside of like a highway, like
yeah,
a bunch
that's
of people
where
outside
right,
the highway,
like 5 miles at least away.
Yeah, yeah, but boy was it great to see that. Pretty amazing.
So actually, I have a remix of the Space Shuttle Challenger liftoff on top of a Crystal Method song called Vapor Trails. Could we maybe play that now?
Sure, yeah, you bet. Yeah.
Okay. And so, yep.
listening to WMFO in Medford. If the electrical power and everything else that depended on it, like cellular communication systems and the internet, shut down, would you freak out? How long could you stay at home with the supplies you've currently got? Do you have enough stored water and ready-to-eat food to last 3 days? How about a week? Unexpected situations such as a power outage, water disruption, or other emergencies can happen at any time, so be prepared. In addition to food and water, it is also a great idea to keep a few flashlights and other non-flammable light sources handy. Candles and other open flames can be very dangerous, and the worst possible time to cause a fire is when there's some other emergency going on. This is a public service message from Ready.gov and WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. Now, you are an emergency preparedness person, right, Edward? You said you're pretty prepared. You got enough food for a week, enough water for a week?
Yeah, I take emergency preparedness pretty seriously. I'm not a prepper like there are some people who have bunkers and have acquired weapons to protect themselves.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And that's definitely not me, but I think that I've got plenty of food in the basement that's canned. I've got a chest freezer in the basement, one of the best gifts that my parents ever gave me. Lets me have
frozen a chest freezer, like for meats and things like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
One of the things that a big breakthrough with that was I like ice cream, and being able to have many flavors of ice cream.
Yep, yep.
Before we got that chest freezer, my wife and I would kind of have fights about how many containers of ice cream I had versus, you know, the frozen foods
and that. Which one to get.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep, yep.
But when I've got like 8 different kinds of ice cream now.
Right, right. No, that's a lot. See, I got 3 for Christmas and New Year's. I'm like, you know, New Year's, you got to have a little something. So I made the homemade pizzas, but I also got 3 different types of ice cream. They were pints, but I had forgotten I had a half gallon of vanilla that was still in there, and I'm like, wow, I got a lot of ice cream in here, you know, for a couple of people to share, and I'm just like, this is a little bit much, but it's still, you know, to my credit, it's still in the freezer. I haven't eaten it yet. I've been doing pretty good with my new regimen for January, which has been at least walking at least 3 miles a day.
Excellent.
Outside of all the other walking you do during the day. And just to set, okay, I've got a course that I'm set on, and I'll do a little bit extra. If the weather's good or I'm feeling good, I'll keep going. And it's going good so far. And it's nice to get the body flowing again. So I can eat things like ice cream and not feel as guilty.
Yeah, 3 miles is a pretty good distance. I know my neighbors, Steve and Maureen, they're like walking 5 miles. Mm-hmm. And I go also 5 days a week along the wonderful Mystic River Reservation.
Yeah, you mentioned that. It's nice.
It's just four blocks away here. Although I would say that these months of January and February are the most dangerous months of the year for that kind of physical activity. And this week, I went out running both yesterday and today, and you got to be careful with that.
Yeah, black ice.
There's the most dangerous part actually is, in general, going on the streets of Somerville to get down to where Route 16 is.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of the snow that was on sidewalks, and then it melted, and now it's a sheet of ice.
Yeah, or the little rocks that form after it's been cold for a while. So the snow has become ice, and you've just got a whole bunch of snowballs and ice balls, and you can roll your ankle pretty easy going off a curb.
Yeah.
Or the sidewalks that aren't cleared completely. It's a tough time to be walking and running out there. But I look at it as almost like putting your armor on every day as a knight. You know, I put on the long johns, I put on an extra shirt and the long coat, and I put on the big fluffy coat You know, almost like that the Christmas story when you have the big puffy jacket, and as soon as you fall down, you can't get up again because you have so much stuff on you, you can't move. You're yep. rolling around in the snow.
I had four layers of shirts on today. And that kept me pretty warm, particularly yeah. with the big WMFO hoodie.
Nice.
That we offered this year as a return reward.
Sure, sure.
That's serving me pretty well for my winter wear.
Very nice. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of New England winters anymore, but I can live in the cold, and I'm perfectly fine as long as you're covered. Your skin is going to be exposed a little bit. My friends are out in Chicago, and that's been bitterly cold. I mean, -2, -9. I mean, that's getting really scary. I mean, you know, I remember reading, what was it, The Most Dangerous Game, and the person spits into the air and it crackles.
Uh-huh.
I remember reading that years ago, a short story. I think that was about... like hunting other people on an island or something, The Most Dangerous Game. And I remember at one point they talked about spittle crackling in the midair because it was so cold out there.
I remember when they had those power outages in Texas and it got really cold there, how some residents of Texas really freaked out about the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, as long as you've got enough layers on, excuse me. It's really not a problem. I mean, when people freeze, it's because they're not wearing enough clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading this story about a 10-year-old kid, and his parents let him sleep outdoors even when it was 0 degrees. But he said, you know, as long as I'm wearing enough clothes, it's not a problem.
Well, I remember, were you a Boy Scout ever?
Yeah.
Cub Scout? I was too. And doing wilderness survival, I mean, you really, other than... You know, for the most part, you know, you did your camp stuff in the summer, but there were winter camps.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was Camp Wataka that was up in New Hampshire. And we went there and we did winter activities. You know, we did sleds. We did ice fishing. We looked at like we did biology, looked at like microbes and stuff. And, you know, we did astrology, astronomy, like all kinds of stuff. It was fun. We did it for 2-3 weeks, and it was cold. I mean, the weather, you know, didn't heat up in the middle of February in 1983 when I was a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout. But yeah, nowadays I think it's just so easy for people just to stay indoors and the glow and the warmth of their iPhones. You know,
I had a scouting experience in the winter too, and that unfortunately my sleeping bag really wasn't warm. It was a summer, and I remember just freezing, shaking in the tent, saying, "Why am I here?
Yeah.
Is this fun? It's not fun."
In my 30s, I went. I went up to the White Mountains and Triple I Road. It's dispersed camping, and you basically can get yourself a fire pit, and that's about it. So there's campsites set up. So the rangers have gone and they've made a bunch of fire pits all over the trail, and you can basically find a site and go. And it was late October, and it was a cold night. The leaves had changed. It was beautiful up there, but it got down to about, I don't know, 20, 15. And I had a 0 degree bag, but I left my feet outside of the 0 degree bag at one point.
Hmm.
And I woke up and I was just shaking my entire body. You know, you're going into hypothermia, and I couldn't stop shaking. And it was just, my feet were ice cold, and it affected, like, the whole rest of my body. And I just started, like, spinning for a couple of minutes, and it took a while to warm me up. And I'm like, we got to get in the car and get out of here. I'm like, it's too cold to camp at this point. Because we're, you know, in shorts and T-shirts, you know,
yeah.
in our 30s, thinking it was going to be, you know, 60 degrees out. But it dropped really cold because we were in October at that point. But plenty of experience going, but we just, you know, weren't even thinking about it. We were warm, and until all of a sudden I kept my feet outside, you know, and exposure late at night.
In the 24-degree temperature today on my run, I saw two kind of bizarre things. both around the Tufts Boathouse, where the Medford Boat Club is. It's the intersection. It's where the upper and lower Mystic Lakes.
Sure, yeah.
There was a woman who kind of seemed, as I was going in, towards that road, towards the parking lot there, I saw a woman who was kind of crouched over. And as I was coming closer to her, I wondered if she needed help somehow. And I was going to ask her if she needed help. But then as I got closer to her, I saw that her pants were down.
Oh, boy.
And it
she probably didn't need any help.
Right.
Right.
I guess she was trying to go to the bathroom. Right.
Yep, yep.
But right there on the road. But I kind of saw that and I just said, okay, I'm not going to offer to help. And I went off. And then after I kind of had took in my nature there along this beach that's down there that I really love, my third favorite spot in the world, I saw a couple of Tufts students coming out of their boathouse, and they were dressed in swimsuits.
Yeah.
And they looked wet.
Hmm. Some people like doing that, what do they call it, the polar bear plunge on January 1st. They'll do the polar bear plunge, but some people do it all year. You know, I don't like that. I'm like, my heart will seize right up. I'm not doing that.
No yeah, way. I like hot showers.
Yeah, me too. Me too. But my friend Terrence, he was doing it for a number of years. He said, you would meet interesting people. And so I'm like, I don't need to go jump in the ocean in order to meet interesting people. I'm good. It's like, I'll sit on the side and like eat some corn chowder while you're doing it. You know, have a nice Taster's Choice coffee or something, you know. That was the other nice thing about the wintertime. One of the things I do like about the wintertime is you have something like a nice, you know, cup of coffee or Ovaltine or a hot chocolate, and it makes the winter go by faster, I think. If you have like the routine and you're going for a walk every day, coming in and looking forward to something every single day, it makes the winter go by much, much faster.
Mm.
We're already almost through January, which is nice. And we've had a good January, I think, pretty much. Yeah. How about you? How are you doing with the snow so far, other than for running?
When it snows, if it's significant, then I take that to be my exercise. And I take care of my wonderful neighbor, Mrs. Stefano's walks and driveways for her. So in that case, yeah, if I'm getting an hour workout, I think even though I'm very much on the 5 days a week, 5 miles running, and then an hour of weightlifting on Saturdays, I think when I get up and I go outside, I remind myself that I am doing these activities for my physical health.
Right.
And if I get hurt doing them, then I'm not fulfilling the purpose.
Right, right.
And I had one incident. It was on September 29th. Where I was running along the Mystic River Reservation and my foot came down in a funny way.
Oh.
And for 2 months afterwards, I was pretty much out of commission. I still ended up walking my 5 miles and 5 days a week. And it had an unintended consequence of with my friend Edward Taylor. He took me around some of the other kind of off-trail places on the Mystic River Reservation. And I learned so much more about it, and it was a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And like some people have said in various ways in life, sometimes apparently bad things happen to you, but then you kind of look at the way that they unfold and it's good things sure. come out of them.
Sure. Yeah. I've been feeling that way about January so far. You know, it's like I had a rough December. A lot of things happened and changed and, you know, it's interesting how I can take, taking lemons and making lemonade out of them. Did you have a ligament tear or anything like that or something break or just a big stretch? Or
I didn't go to the doctor. Yeah. I've had a problem like this a couple of years ago. And what I just understand that they would in general say or that I was is just go easy on it.
Sure.
And when you think that you're right, you know, start taking it up, but slowly.
The body will heal. It just takes a little bit of time, especially as you get a little older. But I had a good roll last January at the very first weekend, And I just happened to be getting off of a stool and came down wrong, and my foot was asleep because I was wearing an extra pair of socks. I think I was wearing three socks, as a matter of fact, because I had gone for a little hike with my friends and a little exercise, and then I tried to get off the stool, and my foot was dropped. Mm. So when I came down, it actually rolled, and it stretched it so far that it actually took a little bit of the bone off.
Oh no!
And then so I went in, got an X-ray, and it was broken there. But after a whole summer of it cracking and clicking and stuff, it's like this past month and last month, it's been so much better, and it took almost a full year for it to actually get better, at least to the point where I can actually be doing my miles every day.
I'm afraid of these downward spiral kind of situations, and I could just see something where you aren't able to go. Well, this happens with a lot of people. There's something that happens, and you aren't able to exercise or get as much activity. And then you end up suffering from that, and it makes problems worse. Just trying to stay out of those kind of death spirals.
It's true. Like eating bread today, I had like some of that flaky, crusty bread is like a little bit toasted that they'll give to you at a nice Italian restaurant.
Mm.
And a little piece of that crust just like right in my windpipe, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm having a coughing fit here at lunchtime, and people are gonna think I have COVID or something. But no, it was just a little crusty piece of bread that went down the wrong way. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, it looks like we've pretty much run out of time.
Yeah, we're going to do our transition here, and I'm gonna bring you over to Edward, who will be here with you until 10 p.m. doing plastic sushi, strawberries, and thyme.
Tears of the Gods, yes. Sloppy.
I'm sorry. Yes, Tears of the Gods. Yes.
Sloppy six finger slide with
Hound Dog Taylor.
Yep. And then some glitch core. So stay tuned for that. Thanks so much, Chris, for having me on your show.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. I'm going to be here one more week in January here for a 3-hour block. That will be next week from 5 to 8 p.m. So once again, if you are around, you're welcome to come back on in 7 to 8, and we can chat if you are free.
Thank you. Yes, I look forward to that.
I'm going to put on a little rush as we say goodbye to Chris's helpful tips today, and I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Edward, and I will see you next week, everybody. This is Force 10 by Rush.